Blog Talk Radio.
Round up the usual suspects.
It's unusual suspects this year. Welcome to this week's Left Ahead podcast, and this is Mike Ball. I blog at leftahead.com and herrumfer.com. I should tell you right off the bat, we have a guest next week. It's a big topic to me, so I hope you tune in and like it. Josh Ostroff, who was the interim director of transportation for Massachusetts. It's T numeral 4 MA, but it's a consortium of, I think it's like 50 different organizations that are out for mass transit and for social equity. And so that's what we're going to be talking about how to get ordinary people and poor people from where they live to where they work effectively, safely, inexpensively, and some equity. So that's be next Tuesday, the 30th, at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'll have a notice on that at Blog Talk Radio at Left Ahead and on my Twitter feed. That's Word, W-H-I-R-R-E-D, Word. And Josh is a smart guy, so do listen to that one. Today we'll talk about the four questions on the Massachusetts ballot in November. Its ballot initiatives are a moderate thing here. If you go to California, remember their history, they're ballot initiative crazy out there, and a couple western states that do that sort of thing. But California is the worst because pretty much if you have an idea and you get enough people to sign up to do a petition, it goes on the ballot, statewide ballot, and it doesn't have to be funded. They've gotten themselves in some very serious trouble that way, they're ballot crazy. But we have more of a stricture on it here, and you have to get your you get your petitions, and it's going to be into a couple categories about whether it's requires a any sort of amendment. That's a big deal. Goes through a couple sessions of the legislature, but basically the ballot initiative, you have to go through that, and then it goes to the Attorney General's office. That's Maura Healey, and she and her crew give it a rigorous workout. They check it to make sure they had all the right legal signatures and wording, and it's something that is legally possible, including the constitutionality. In fact, I'll go through the top two didn't make it here in a minute and talk about why they didn't do it as an example. But this year there were over 20 submissions, and four of them ended up making the cut. Both of they passed through the petition process, and they had the wording, and then the four of them made through the constitutionality cut. So they're going to be on there, and I'll talk about those. And let me get right to the couple that didn't make, as an example. Okay, there's one asking the voters to approve or disapprove of the Boston hosting the 2024 Summer Olympics. That had some manner of state funding and required approval for a variety of reasons, and it didn't get on the ballot. And this one was really pretty obvious and pretty simple, but they had all the petitions, all the signatures, and so there had to be a check on it, and why didn't it make it? Well, it was actually pretty simple. They didn't get enough support, and the organizers realized that the voters weren't going to go for it, and the citizens didn't want it, so they dropped the request, and then they withdrew their petitions. So that question is there, and it goes away. It's moot. Second one is Corporations Are Not People initiative, and that is popular nationwide in a number of states where that's being considered. And I think it would have passed in Massachusetts, but it didn't get on the ballot for very different reasons. It wasn't moot. The question was, who should be doing this? And Healey's office looked at it and said, Massachusetts has this Article 48 on about ballot initiatives in its constitution, and it says what can and cannot be decided by a ballot initiative. And this one, according to Amendment 48, would have required the legislature to produce the bill and pass it, and not by a ballot initiative. So that's more typical of what you go. And I'll put a link in that the post on this on leftahead.com, and there's a good chart where Ballotopedia did the work on the ones that made it and didn't make it, and why not, and those that didn't make it are in one big table, and you click on the red stop sign beside the on the right side of that column, that row, and it'll tell you in the footnote what it was. You click down there and you find out why it didn't make it. That's right. For those who really like civics, it's a fascinating little exercise, and Ballotopedia has already done all the work for you. You just got to go ahead and check it out. So I'd advise that. And again, that link is going to be on my post at leftahead.com, and you should go out there and check that out. So otherwise, I'll run a little bit through the four, and if you have a horse in this race, you can give me a call. I am at 718-664-6966. It'll be a nice, breech robot voice come on, and once you hear her voice, you can push 1, and it lets me know that you're on, and as long as your number is not blocked, I'll connect you. So, again, that is 718-664-6966 if you want to discuss any of these four. So, the four that did make it on are disparate. It's wonderful. I like that. One of them, question number 1, is expanding slot machine gaming. That's gambling to the rest of us. Number 2 is charter school expansion. Number 3 was conditions for farm animals, the way that one's phrased. And then number 4 is the biggie, and it's big in many ways, big in topic, but it also is a 25-page proposal on this thing. So that's the legalization, regulation, and taxation of marijuana in Massachusetts. If you go to my leftahead.com post on this, there'll be a link to each of the proposals, and you can just drive yourself silly doing that. Some of them are less than one full page, and the marijuana one is 25 pages, 24, not counting all the signatures from all these great supporters. So let's get into it and say, for those of us who work in elections, I got to say, most people don't do their homework on ballot proposals. So the initiatives get up there, and the Secretary of the Commonwealth eventually, sometime in late September or early October, will get around to mailing an expensive little booklet that details everything. And it is an incredible detail, the pros, the cons, the proposal, everything that you need to know about it and won't. Because I do work elections, and people come in every time there are questions, it's 1 or 6, they don't know about it. So Secretary Billy Galvin sends out these brochures, and nobody reads them. Almost nobody reads them. I just don't understand it. And I can't give advice on election day. We're not allowed to talk politics in the polling place, so I can't tell them. But I can tell you. So this year it's NNYY is all you need to know. Just do what I say, and everything's going to be fine. But I'll explain why I think these things are. So question 1 is expanding slot machine gambling. And a yes vote would open up a second slots parlor, that's slots only, in Massachusetts. There is one in Plainville, and it is modestly successful. People who want to play slots legally need to go down someplace in Connecticut right now if they want to do that, or out in western Massachusetts for that kind of thing. So this would open up another one, and it basically is a gimme. The fix is in on this one. It's going to be the Wynn in the casino in Revere, and the people there in Somerville and Revere don't want it. They don't want the traffic. They don't want the drugs. They don't want the criminals that come with it. But the state has voted, and we have said that we will allow up to 3 of these, and we're probably going to have a 4th. There's probably going to be at least one Native American casino as well, because if we allow them, then the federal law is going to allow another one. So we'll have much more gambling in Massachusetts than we should, I think. And I'm not totally against gambling. I buy an occasional lottery ticket. I mean, an occasional. When it gets over like $100 million, I might buy, you know, one ticket a week. So it's either $1 or $2. That's the idea of gambling for me. And I did nicely in college. I played poker, and the other guys tended to play when they're drinking, and I didn't. So, but I tend to win money in college, so that was okay. So I'm not totally opposed to gambling, but I don't like casinos. I find them loud and garish and crass. And it looks like it's just a good way to separate the elderly and the those of modest means from their income. A lot of people call it a tax on stupidity. They also say that about lotteries, which I play. So anyway, but the question is, do we want another one? And I think the answer should be no. We're going to have casinos around. There are all others in places like Connecticut and Maine. They can go do that. And there's the one in Plainville. I would respect the voters in the towns over there, like around Revere, and they don't want it. And I think they shouldn't have to have it. I don't think we need another casino. That's personal. And there you go. Charter school expansion. It's also personal. Now the question is, should the state limit on charter schools be lifted? And the proposal is to add up to 12 new charter schools every year in perpetuity, apparently. There's no limit on that. Right now, I believe there are 71 charter schools in Massachusetts. And they, if you pay any attention to this at all, have a mixed record. Some of them do okay. Most of them don't seem to do any better than the regular public schools. Because in theory, these are public schools, by the way, and they're financed with public money. And they don't seem to be better than others. And some of them have a bad history of picking the smartest kids and taking them and not serving the larger community. And I think that alone disqualifies them. But there are people there who like they like the uniforms. They like the panache of the cliche of a charter school. So I wouldn't know how this goes. You know, I bet it might even pass. But I also think that 12 new charter schools a year going on and going on is immediately too many and is going to glut it, and it's going to just suck money out of the regular public schools. And I think in the main, education throughout the Commonwealth is going to suffer for that. So I would go on no on that one, no on additional slots parlor, and no on charter school expansion. And the next one, question three, is just called conditions for farm animals. And that's a little bit more complicated, but really not that big an issue. It's only for chickens, pigs, and veal. Veal calves, poor little veal calves. I mean, I know many people who love their veal. They will never go to an Italian restaurant without ordering veal piccata. They just think, you know, tender, milky-looking little lamb, little calf is just so wonderful. But in general, the conditions in which the veal calves are raised, they're caved. They're put into a very small area, not allowed to move. They're not allowed to grow because they don't want them to get muscular. They want their meat to be bloodless and a little fatty, so you can be very tender. So that's kind of cruel. And the same thing with the pigs and the chickens. Is do you get your eggs from the chickens that are put in teeny little cages and where they can't turn around? They just sit there and they eat and they poop and they lay eggs, and and the same thing with their meat, but they're not allowed to turn around. And the pigs it's even worse in some ways for the mammal, is also in a tiny little cage where they can't turn around. They never exercise. They're just raised there, and they're stuffed full, and they don't go outside. And so the people who are for question three want to prevent and limit any sale of the meat or the eggs. It's chickens and veal and pork that are raised in what they call inhumane, cruel conditions. So they want the animal to be able to freely turn around and, well, live like an animal. So they want that. Now, I would suspect that were this to pass, some of these food items would, at least in the short term, become more expensive. I've seen at places like Costco. I shop at Costco. And they've gone with cage-free chickens. Their chickens actually are in large rooms, but they aren't in these little teeny places where they're held in and they can't turn around. And so they made that switch about the same time that there was that huge chicken virus that killed so many, and then the price of the eggs went way up anyway. Well, the Costco eggs have still stayed up there. They're like twice what they are in the grocery store for the cage-free. I suspect that if it becomes the law of the Commonwealth, that we're going to have more and more vendors who are able to efficiently produce their eggs, and the premiums might be more like 30% rather than 100% price rise. But I think you can expect, you know, somewhere between 20 and 30% increase in cost in your pork and your pork veal and your chicken and eggs. The question is, you know, it's a moral question, I guess. And I think these people are actually morally correct. And I'm not so kind that I am a vegetarian, but I think this is the right thing to do. So for me, this is a yes. And then finally, the big one, and big in many ways, is the legalization, regulation, and taxation of marijuana. And we're really slow. A lot of other states like Colorado and Washington are well ahead of Massachusetts on doing this. It took us years and years to pass medical marijuana permission, and even then we have been so slow in implementing it. It's like it doesn't exist here. There, you know, many cities like Boston are just beginning to get one or two little shops, and it's kind of sad. But you know, for there are many people out there with glaucoma and forms of cancer, and medical marijuana is very useful for, and we have been terrible about that. So this is the next step. You know, people want a slippery slope. Yes, this is a slippery slope. And it comes back to, well, I'll tell you a story of my family. My grandfather grew up, he was born in a farm overlooking the Potomac in the western mountains of Maryland. And he said his farm boys, they couldn't afford tobacco. They didn't have any money. But they would smoke the flowers from the hemp plant. And it turned out all along the Potomac in the Civil War and the Spanish-American War and World War I, the federal government planted huge amounts of hemp for rope. And the farm boys would, I guess girls too, but I know certainly farm boys would collect that and they could smoke that. And he said there was a mild buzz to it. So my agent grandfather, who was born in 1900, didn't see why people got so upset about marijuana, because he said it was anything like what you got from him. It's nothing. It's like 3.2 beer. And granted, there are strong forms of marijuana and all that kind of stuff. But nevertheless, the idea is there. And the other part of his reasoning and my reasoning here is if you are regulating alcohol, which is far more destructive to your body and to automobile deaths, at least half of the deaths apparently are caused by drunks. And it is legal for anybody who's over 21. And you can do that. You can buy it and store it, have it, make it. And pretty much what this legislation would do would be to put marijuana on a par with alcohol, and it's using alcohol as the model. So the state would then get revenue from it, and then they could test it regularly for random samplings to see what the quality was and its strength was. So you're just faking it is out there. That made perfect sense. And they would determine who got to sell it. And then otherwise, it's pretty much small amounts, like under an ounce. You could have under an ounce, which you could not smoke in public, which is interesting, but you could possess it. You may not smoke it in an automobile. It's much like the open carry law, again, a lot more like alcohol. And you could have up to 10 ounces at home, as long as it was under lock. So it's actually a little stricter than the alcohol, but it's the same idea. And the legislation House has, there's a Cannabis Control Commission and a Cannabis Advisory Board, and the Control Commission determines who can sell it and transport it and all that sort of stuff, who can grow it. And the Advisory Board tells you all the other stuff. It's like, you know, who ought to be doing what with it, and there are experts on law enforcement and retail consumers and medical marijuana and on and on and on. Here's the big thing. If you're interested at all, I advise you go to my link at leftahead.com and read the 25 pages. It's fascinating to see. They clearly were not high when they wrote this. I mean, this is like an accountant wrote this. It's so much detail. They want to make sure that everything was covered and all aspects are in there. So, and there are fines. So if you do something bad, like you smoke marijuana when you're driving a car, it's the same fine as a drunk driver. It's $500. It's, you know, nothing to sneeze at. If you're carrying too much on your body, it's still a civil fine of $100. And there are fines like you can grow your own if you're over 21. You can have they limit the amounts you can have. I think it's 6 plants growing at a time, 12 plants at a site. So there'll be 2 people each with 6. And the plants can't even be visible from the public. So if you can see it in public without binoculars or special helicopters or something like that, there's a fine for that. I think it's $300 for that. And for the sales, they are unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, giving rights to the existing medical marijuana vendors. And as you said, there aren't many of those yet. In a way, it sort of makes sense that they're the business types who understand the corporate aspect of this. But I'm wondering now, what is this, just to protect them? I'm not exactly sure, because the people who got the medical marijuana licenses paid a lot of money. They had to have a lot of money up front. And the same thing with the recreational use for those over 21. You only get a license for a year, and you have to renew it, and you have to keep your nose clean. And everybody's got to be nice and play nice, or you don't get your license renewed. So it's pretty strict. I mean, you can imagine if liquor stores had to re-up and reapply every year, and rather than just pay their license fee and have their character attested to by the public and everybody else every year, that might make them think a bit about it too. But that's the deal here. So marijuana is more controlled, stricter here. And back to the important point, then people are going to say, well, what does the state get out of this? And the answer is 3.75% of the sales price, the gross sales price of all the products. So that's a fairly good tax. Now, each locality has the right to add their own fee of like up to 2%. So Boston could do that, for example. And that's, if you're aware of our home rule, that's an important stricture in there, or freedom, I should say, because they basically, localities are not, any municipality is not allowed to just raise the revenue. They can't just impose a fine or a new tax, a levy of any type, without going to the state. And often that will mean then they have to take their town or city charter and revamp it with lawyers and go through the rigmarole, and they go with hat in hand to the legislature. Oh, please, please, let us do that. So home rule in Massachusetts means you can't rule your home. You got to beg. So this law would build in up to 2% for a city to add a tax. They can do that. So that's quite advanced for Massachusetts. And I think they have everything covered here other than they say nothing about the conflicts with any federal laws with their medical, with their recreational use of marijuana. Washington didn't either, so they neither did Colorado. So they're just assuming that within inside the border of Massachusetts, we're going to be cool. So we don't expect the feds to be coming down hard on Massachusetts or any of the residents, but we're looking at whatever they're going to be doing. The only thing that they say about the medical marijuana vendors is they get first dibs on the recreational shops, and then depending on how many are allotted to each area, the remaining shops can get up for lottery for the recreational shops. And you don't need a whole lot of recreational shops. You don't need as many as you do medical, I think. And I'm wondering whether it's going to be synonymous, if we're going to have the exact same vendors handling both. Could very well be. But anyway, I would say yes on this one. I think this should be regulated. It should be taxed. And it should be marriage. People should know what they're eating or smoking. And I think this law ends up covering everything. It is really a type A regulation. And I think it's worth its 25 pages. They put in every damn thing you can think of. So I think they got it all covered. So I say on November 8th, that's a Tuesday, you go in Massachusetts and you're going to vote. Vote no on one, no on two, yes on three, yes on four. And you can quote me on that. Okay, so next Tuesday at same time, 2:30, I'm going to have Transportation for Massachusetts, the interim director, Josh Ostroff, talking about transportation equity. And this is very close to my heart. So if you care at all about transportation, if you care, tune in next Tuesday, 2:30. Thank you very much.
Round up the usual suspects.